Succession Season 1 is over, but Season 2 is just around the corner, so we are just getting started here on Post Show Recaps. Hello, everybody. I am Josh Wigler, and I'm so excited to get into the Cousin Greg of it all, Cajun chicken linguine on the way, on the menu, as we officially launch our Succession coverage here on Post Show Recaps. And of course, along for the ride with me on this podcast journey is the Shiv Roy to my Tom Wamsgans, Emily Fox. How are you?
I'm great. I'm very impressed that you got Tom's last name pronounced correctly the first
time. I used
shot.
To think it was Longsgans, and then I
get Longsgams.
And then I kept reading Wamsgans. I was like, it's Wamsgans? And so I guess it's Wamsgans.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't be here mocking anybody's last name with a last name like Wiggler. But you would
or
agree.
Or maybe like, you're more attuned to this. You're better at this than anybody else because you've been mocked for your last name.
Oh, so it's like I can own that because
it's like
I know
your Napoleon
what it's like.
Complex.
Yeah, I feel like I gotta be careful with that. I feel like I can get into some dicey territory. But I feel like you're the Shiv to my Tom. Like I'm punching above my weight class with Emily Fox.
And Emily is spelled in a really weird Gaelic, set of letters. So it's very hard to read my name and know how to pronounce it correctly.
I think that that's right. All right. So Emily and I are so delighted to be talking to you people about HBO's Succession. We are going away from Big Little Lies, the Monterey Five, to talk about a whole bunch of other people enacting criminal behavior. Very wealthy criminal behavior. That seems to be our brand here on Post Show Recaps.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, but we're talking about Succession, created by Jesse Armstrong, starring a whole host of incredible actors playing a whole host of incredibly bad people. And for today's podcast, it's a preview special. We're going to aim to catch you up on all things Succession, what it's about, who the characters are, where everything left off, which means full spoilers for season one.
Yes.
So don't listen any further if you haven't watched season one yet. Do a quick binge of season one. You've
it's
got
very
some time.
Bingeable. We just did it to kind of prep for season two, and I think we've both enjoyed it tremendously.
Hey, for us, because it was our second pass through, we were both just like kind of like start, like the process of starting it was a little slow. We were like, all right, we'll get to it. And then as soon as we started, we were like, all right, next one.
Yeah.
And we were through it in 2 days. So very, very bingeable show, especially on a first watch. You wouldn't
yes.
be having any kinds of problems like that. So definitely get into it before you're listening to this podcast at the very least. Or I don't know, if you just want to hear us talking about stuff and you don't care about the spoilers, you're invited along for the ride. But we are going to be getting into some of what we're expecting for moving forward in Succession, starting with season two, which premieres August 11th, Sunday night on HBO. To give you a sense of our podcasting schedule, Emily and I are going to be aiming to record our recaps on Monday mornings most weeks. I'm sure that that's going to change on occasion from time to time, but it gives you plenty of time to get your feedback in from that Sunday night to Monday morning window. We want that feedback from you. It's such a great part of the Big Little Lies podcast. We want to keep that up. So tweet at Post Show Recaps, tweet at Emilet is Emily Fox on Twitter, and I am at Round Howard. Subscribe as well. Post Show Recaps on your podcast app of choice. Good amount of business up front, Emily Fox.
Yeah, now let's have the party in the back.
All right. Well, before we get into the party, before we get too far into the conversation, a quick note that this episode of Post Show Recaps is brought to you by Progressive. Saving money on your car insurance is easy with Progressive. It's an average savings of $699 a year for customers who switch and save. In fact, customers can qualify for an average of 6 discounts on their auto policy when they switch to Progressive. Discounts just for starting a quote online or owning multiple vehicles. So get your quote online at progressive.com and see how much you could be saving. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Okay, Emily Fox, here's the situation.
Yeah.
You ready?
Yeah.
You and I are about to talk about Succession,
yeah,
which
yeah.
is a show about a very wealthy, powerful family at the top of a media empire doing all sorts of shady business dealings and screwing over the little guy, the 99%. It's the top 1% of the top 1%, as Elliot Alderson would say. Where should we begin? I mean, what is Succession for the people who missed out on Succession last summer? It debuted last summer to much critical acclaim. Not maybe like a gangbusters ratings hit, but I think that it caught fire, especially towards the end. I know you and I caught on to Succession about midway through the first season of the show because our good friend, shout out to Mr. Chocolate, who I will not identify any further than that.
I forgot that he was the reason we watched it.
Yes, our friend Josh, who derives that nickname from one of the bears featured in Timmy Treadwell's Grizzly Man. So that should give you an idea of his whole demeanor. But he has great TV recommendations, and he recommended to us, you guys should be watching Succession. How are you not watching Succession yet? And he's like, I'm going to watch the first couple of episodes with you, and you are going to fall for it instantly. And I think Emily and I were both kind of skeptical, and we turned it on.
This is right before we went to Mexico, isn't it?
Yeah, we went on a trip last summer.
He came and slept over because he was far from the airport. So he came over the night before because we had an early flight the next day. We all sat down after eating Chinese food together, and he was like, okay, you people are TV people. How are you not watching this amazing show on HBO?
It hadn't even really been on my radar. And so we're like, all right, well, we need to go to sleep early and we need to do something to occupy our time for the foreseeable future. For people who don't know, Emily and I, by the way, we're married. This is, you know, for people who are just like wandering into the Succession podcast, it's not like we're just like some random people who are hanging together in a
house. You're just my roommate.
Yeah, we're husband and wife. And so our friend Josh, a.k.a. Mr. Chocolate, came over and he convinced us to watch Succession. And I think we were skeptical, and then we put it on, and it didn't take much further than the first sight of Cousin Greg to know that we were in the tank.
I think I've read a couple of reviews of season one that I think really
season one or season two?
Season one.
Okay.
That really put the show in perspective for those who are looking for comparisons, want to sort of understand the origin behind it. Obviously, this is scripted and, you know, sort of
dramatized
fiction, but, you know, it can be closely tied to other media conglomerates in the real world, like the Redstones or the Murdochs. So that kind of gives you an understanding of the power we're talking about and the size and the wealth. And then I really loved, I think it was an article from Vulture where they talk about how it kind of feels like Arrested Development meets King Lear.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. I read that as well. And I think that that's a, you know, it's a hard show to talk about because, well, it's a hard show to talk about for a lot of reasons. I think it's going to be a fun challenge throughout the podcasting. But it's hard. It's a hard show to, like, when you're trying to recommend it to people. And I think that that was part of the struggle initially that night. And if we didn't have nothing better to do, maybe we wouldn't have given Succession a shot.
Yeah.
Because I think it's a little bit hard to pitch it to people who don't know what it's all about. Cause it's not an out and out drama, and it's not an out and out comedy. It's a
dramedy.
It is, which is a stupid word, but I think that that's closer than just saying it's a drama or saying it's a comedy. I think, you know, if you want to have like a classier word, Emily, like a tragicomedy, I think is
that's
good.
Better than dramedy.
I just think that it sounds cool.
Ew.
I kind of like that. But I think that when you're looking for like pop culture touchstones to marry together, I do think, you know, talking about like Shakespeare's King Lear.
Yeah.
About
you were in that play, weren't you?
No, I just loved that play.
I
studied it in college. to not a big deal.
Drama minor over here. Drama minor.
It was a really great time. Midsummer Night's Dream that I was in, Emily Fox. Get your facts straight, please.
Sorry.
To take like the rubric of King Lear, which is about a very powerful man who is in his waning years of power, and clearly power is going to slip from his grasp anyway. and then throw in a bunch of power hungry siblings and people who want in on that, who want in on the kingdom and the crown and the throne. Game of Thrones Ian in that way, of course, in its politicking. But then add like the bumbling, furiously idiotic tomfoolery of the Bluth family from Arrested Development. And like, that sort of like gets you close to what Succession is.
I would say also the camera work kind of lends itself to that too. There are really quick zoom ins on people's reactions to things. That remind me a lot of Arrested Development too.
Well, I think what's amazing about this show, it really, I think you're right. I think you hit on it. Like the camera work does a lot of work in terms of like letting you know, like the camera will zoom in at a moment where like something really stark has occurred, and like your attention should really be piqued that somebody has said something either really bad or stupid or rotten or provocative or important. You know, you follow the lens and the lens really helps tell you the story. But that tone, the look of the show, Mark Mylod, who is a director on Game of Thrones, is an executive producer on this show and is a director on this show and has done a lot of that heavy lifting across season one, and I believe is involved in season two, though I don't know that for certain. But the person who really established the look of Succession is Adam McKay, who is, you know, got you know, most of his renown comes from his comedy work. You know, it comes from collaborations with Will Ferrell, like Anchorman and such.
Well, isn't Will Ferrell an executive producer on this,
well,
too?
Well, that's because Adam McKay and Will Ferrell are really tight, or were very, very tight.
They have a falling out?
No, I don't think they had a falling out, but they had a creative partnership that they did announce sometime in the last year or so, that they would be seeing other people, that they're still great friends. I don't think that there's too much there, but they're both involved in this as producers. But I think Adam McKay's career trajectory is fascinating to follow, as he was, you know, for a long time really well known for his comedy work. And then he started getting into things like The Big Short, you know, chronicling, you know, the housing crisis, you know, back in the mid-2000s, late-2000s, with Christian Bale and a whole host of other incredible actors involved in that, where it has, like, notes of comedy in it, but it's also, it's a huge tragedy because it's following the fallout of all of these greedy, rich idiots who caused such a terrible crisis.
I'm sensing a theme.
You know, Adam McKay also directed, once again with Christian Bale, Vice, chronicling Dick Cheney, who is not somebody that we're a fan of on this podcast. So to let you
know,
did
he say
where
something really
from.
Awful about post show recaps?
He left a scathing review, and we have not.
Cheney.
We have not forgotten. We have not forgotten. That has not gone unnoticed.
I love the idea of Dick Cheney just loving post show recaps, and then like you saying something a little off color, and him being like, "Never again."
Yeah,
I gotta leave a review.
He's a prolific troll, Dick Cheney, whose Twitter alt is T-Dub, has gone silent in the past few days, not to out T-Dub. But I think that, you know, this is a guy whose interests, Adam McKay's interests, have grown beyond just what's funny, but also what's awful, and how you can tell a story about what's awful in a way that makes you laugh so much because you can't believe how awful it is. That's kind of Succession's sweet spot.
I mean, we're
talking about a group of characters that are really to their core terrible people for the almost to a person when it comes to the main characters. And if you're not an awful person, then you're kind of an idiot.
There's a fine line sometimes depending on who we're talking about.
You know, like that's your best out, is like either you're an idiot or you're awful on Succession. And one of the magic tricks of this show is that it can often make you feel really awful for some of these people because they go through such terrible things sometimes. And then the flip side of that is there's catharsis involved in watching Succession, because you are watching all of these people who are analogs for people in the real world who are responsible for so much misery due to their astronomical wealth and influence. And to watch them go through every day psychological, self-inflicted, torture and interpersonal dynamics and horrors within their own family, and seeing that in those ways, they are just like, they're just like us. And in this sort of like macro way, what they are going through causes them to go through so much pain and rot and hurt. It's cathartic because it's like, good. I'm glad that you're hurting the way that you are.
Right. But then it like sort of turns around and balloons onto the general populace too. You know, like whatever is miserable for them can be magnified, you know, by a thousand times
100%.
And, you know, trickle down onto the rest of us. So that's not so great.
There's a great scene in the first episode that really highlights that. It's Logan Roy, who's played by Brian Cox. We'll talk about all the characters in greater detail in a little bit, but Logan Roy is the head of Waystar Royco, which is the big media conglomerate at the heart of the show and the seat of the empire, for these characters. And it's his birthday. He's clearly slipping. He's going to have a medical crisis later in that very episode. But for his birthday, everybody's in Manhattan. This is a New York City based show primarily, though it diverges from that a tiny bit. And they're in his apartment in Manhattan, his big, huge palatial apartment. And he wants everybody to go and play the game. And the game is a softball game. And the softball game is going to be conducted on Long Island. And they are going to take this fleet of helicopters to get them from their apartment, their high rise in Manhattan, to the softball field on Long Island. So that trip that would normally take hour and a half, 2 hours.
I know. If anyone's ever been on the LIE,
you know what it's like.
It's a nightmare.
It's a nightmare. Probably takes about 20 minutes at most for these people in this world. They go and they play the game, and Roman Roy, who's played magnificently, he's such a bag of shit, who is played magnificently by Kieran Culkin, challenges this kid who's the son of some of the people who are working for the Roys, where they are playing softball, and says like, you will get $1 million if you can hit a home run. And for the first time in the episode, and so for the first time in the series, we're suddenly like grounded in the perspective of literally the little guy who has been promised this huge potential dream, a life-changing thing that would be a drop in the bucket for the Roys to give this kid $1 million if he could just hit a home run. And he hits the ball and it goes out in the field and he's running, and you could tell that like some of the family members who are out there and fielding the ball are like going a little bit slower or maybe rooting for the kid. The kid gets to home base and he's caught out and he's tagged out, and so he doesn't win. He doesn't get the $1 million. And to add insult to injury, Roman Roy just laughs in the kid's face and rips up the $1 million check. And it really lets you know who we're dealing with and what the consequences of the power that these people wield can be. And the show can be really poignant and powerful when we're rooted in the perspectives of these people. It doesn't happen terribly often, but when it does, it's like, it's horrible. It's just horrible to behold.
Yeah, that's a very cringeworthy moment. Although he does have the consolation prize of being regifted the watch that Tom gives to Logan for his
Tom
birthday.
Tom Wamsgans. Yes. Yeah. So, you know, it's the show really rides that line between being very funny and being very dark, and probably alarmingly being way too real. Way too real in terms of like the types of people that have so much influence in the world in which we live, but also tragically real in the way that families play out and the ways in which children act out against their parents, the ways in which parents fail their kids, the ways in which parents fail their kids because their parents failed them. So I think that there's a lot of like it really intense emotional psychological drama that we can pull out from the interactions between the Roys. And I'm sure, you know, we're going to talk about the business stuff, we're going to talk about the real world implications, but for me, the sweet sauce of success of Succession, the reason it succeeds, is because these characters have such great interplay within one another. They love and hate each other in very unequal measure. It's often hate, and they treat each other so badly. And I think it tells us a lot about the human condition I expect that that's going to be mostly what we focus on, and also the Cousin Greg jokes.
I love the Cousin Greg jokes. They're so good. Yeah, I think this is a really amazing perspective to kind of look in on everybody and how they're treating each other. And, you know, some of the softer moments too, when you think that everyone is getting along and that they do care about each other, but then a wrench is thrown in and there's some sort of hang up or hiccup because of money, because of power, because of influence, you know, all down to even how Logan responds to his alienated brother and how they protect each other in a lot of ways, but both can't stand each other.
Yeah.
And the ways in which that obviously reflects on his children too. It's really pretty compelling stuff.
All right. So let's talk about the cast of characters here on Succession and who we are dealing with. And I think that we got to start at the top of Mount Olympus, the Zeus of this family.
Marsha.
I wasn't gonna talk about Marsha just yet, though I do love to say her name. Chaim Abbas, who plays Marcy Roy, Marsha Roy.
Is it Marcy?
Well, that's what they call her sometimes, but it is Marsha.
Okay, good.
Short for Marcy. Brian Cox as Logan Roy. John O'Hagan himself.
Yes.
Captain, my captain. And I wonder how Brian Cox would react if our first touchstone, first mentioned credit on behalf of the great legendary actor Brian Cox was his role in Super Troopers. And I'm, of course, referring mostly to Super Troopers 2. For Brian Cox's.
Why not the first one?
No, I was just kidding. I love them both, though, and I think Super Troopers 2, deeply underrated. But Brian Cox, known for much more than Super Troopers.
We saw him in a play once with Ethan Hawke. Do you remember that?
I do remember that.
What was it called? Like a cherry tree or something?
Yeah, I think that's right. I was forgetting the name. Brian Cox, no stranger to HBO, had a temporary brief role on Deadwood once upon a time.
Really?
Shakespearean drama, Emily.
Cool.
Emily, you can't see it, but Emily just rolled her eyes because she doesn't like it when I talk about Deadwood as Shakespearean.
It's a great show.
It's whatever. It's a fantastic show. Brian Cox, Logan Roy. He is the king of Waystar Royco, which is this media empire, this vast conglomerate that has so much influence in the world. He is a bad, bad, bad man. The Tywin Lannister of Succession, for sure.
Mm. Mm.
What are your thoughts on Logan Roy?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like he has always gotten his way. He's really cutthroat. He doesn't really feel for anyone else's thoughts, you know, feelings, etc. He just seems like he's power hungry and will do anything at any cost to get what he wants.
He's very sick as well. I think that's a really important undercurrent throughout season one, certainly, and I imagine it's going to be an undercurrent throughout season two, that he has a brain hemorrhage at the start of season one that takes him out of commission for a while and really enacts clearly what the title of the series draws from, the question of succession. Who is going to succeed Logan Roy when Logan Roy dies? He has four children, and who among them will be the heir to Waystar Royco? And he's able to recover somewhat over the course of the first season. So there are constant questions about how on or off his game is he still. There's an attempt to mutiny, basically. There's a coup that is staged midway into the first season, as they try to form, they do enact a vote of no confidence that does not break the way of the people who are trying to unseat Logan. Because Logan, he is as powerful as he is for a reason. He's a survivor. He is not somebody who is going to be put down easily. I think that it's also, I think it was the Hollywood Reporter, actually, my home base at THR. They did a really great cover story on Succession with interviews with the cast members, and also a really funny video series as well with the cast members that I highly encourage you guys to check out if you've got some spare time. But during that,
if you're waiting to go for an early morning flight to Oaxaca,
right? I think if you've got the chance, but if you don't, There's a question that everybody is asked in the video where it's brought up who is Logan's favorite child, and like all the different cast members are asked to weigh in on it. And we'll talk about the specific children, but I think it's Sarah Snook who plays Shiv who gives the best answer, and she says that Logan Roy's favorite child is his company.
I like that.
He's an old man. He's 80. He is losing many of his faculties. The first time we see him, indeed, the first time we see anything on Succession, he's peeing on the floor in the middle of the night.
Super dehydrated, by the way. My gosh.
It's bad pee. It's very bad. It's like orange Gatorade quality pee. It's not good. And that's the first time we see him. So he's clearly slipping. But you will have to pry the company out of his cold, dead hands before he gives it up willingly. So that's Logan Roy. I think you get the sense that a lot of this for him and something that makes him a little different than some of the real life counterparts is, you get the sense that he built this for himself, right? Like a lot of this is brick by brick. This isn't handed to him the same way that wealth is handed to his children, that his children grow up knowing nothing other than wealth and immense power. And Logan Roy is somebody who
he's sort of self-made.
He's much more self-made than some of the people that he has drawn comparisons to in the real world. Let's go through his children. I want to save his oldest child for later. His oldest son, who is a character for sure in both the literal sense, and he is a character. But I think it's more useful to talk about Jeremy Strong as Kendall Roy, who is. If there's a Michael Bluth on this show, he seems like he's the closest, but I don't think that that's quite accurate either. You know, he's maybe like an amalgamation of the Bluth brothers, where he thinks of himself as a Michael Bluth, but maybe he is not quite as level-headed as Michael Bluth himself, even though Michael Bluth was kind of a scumbag from time to time as well.
Well, no, I think that there are a lot of moments where he tries to speak for the people. He tries to remain a little bit more level-headed and sensible. But when you boil
it
down...
He loves to call people, dude.
Yeah.
Come on, seriously?
Yeah, but when you like boil it down, he's still someone who's incredibly wealthy and out of touch. And we see that especially, I think, you know, in the final episode at Shiv's wedding.
Right.
He's sort of interacting with staff and being, you know... very sort of hot-headed about a lot of things. And, you know, he's also enjoying his taste of power here and there throughout the series as well. You know, when he really does think that he's taking over and he's trying to bring new, fresh material to the company, you know, as he assumes sort of like the head of the company. But, you know, ends up having these little tantrums here and there or trying to prove something to people or, you know, when he kind of goes off the rails and starts sort of doing drugs again.
Yeah, bad stuff happens. I mean, I think the key point is that, like, when the series begins, he believes that he is going to be inheriting the company imminently from his father. And it turns out that that is very much not the case, that he will not be in charge of the company anywhere in the vicinity of as quickly as he expects. And that sends him, you know, once his father has his health incident and nobody really knows, is he going to make it out of this thing? He starts very aggressively trying to, Kendall starts aggressively trying to put himself in the position of being in charge. And it works for a time. Then Logan wakes back up and Logan is very much unhappy with the direction that Kendall is taking the company. I think in Kendall's most honest, or in some of his more honest moments, he views his father with a lot of fear and a lot of reverence. I think all of them are very afraid of their father because he's a very, you know, he's a very dominant presence. But I think Kendall looks at Logan's view of the future as a dinosaur refusing to get out of the way of a meteor. And Kendall wants to harness the meteor. He sees that as digital. He sees the future. He fancies himself a futurist who's really in touch. Is he actually probably not quite as much as he gives himself credit for. I think, again, like, he tries to like be really cool and on the level with, you know, artsy types. You know, there's, you know, later on in the season, he's trying to get in on an art company that really doesn't want anything to do with him because he's a Roy. And that's a toxic name, for certain people in the world, for many people in the world. He comes into the show with, as Emily mentions, a drug habit. When we meet him, he's sober, he's clean. A lot of people doubt that about him. He takes that very personally. And eventually, mid-season, when the coup against Logan doesn't work, Kendall regresses and falls very deep down the drug rabbit hole. His cocaine problem that he used to have is amplified by the fact that he takes meth at one point when he's out in the desert. He's doing all sorts of stuff. He's trying to make a name for himself again. He takes another shot at the king, Logan Roy, which we'll talk about the ramifications of that move, because I think that's going to have a lot of important impact for season two. But as he's about to make like his power move to seize the company, and it looks like he finally has his father dead to rights in a buyout because he's teamed up with Logan Roy's biggest rivals, something horrible happens, Emily Fox. Something very terrible happens that that causes Kendall to probably be defanged for the near future.
Yeah, so we see this power struggle happening with Kendall and Logan throughout the entire series, but Kendall decides to make sort of like this really intense move. And as such, is kind of caught in the act of doing so. So he has been working sort of all of these other side deals where he's like, okay, I'm going to sell my shares. I'm going to try to take everything over from the side. Like we're getting dad's arch nemesis, his rival, in on the company. And he's going to find out that, like, you know, basically more or less this is treason, but, you know, he pushed me to do it. He forced my hand. But what ends up happening is that everyone sort of catches wind of this, and Kendall is instantly sort of looked at as the black sheep and ostracized by different family members. And so he kind of goes out of his way and decides to parties really, really hard, and ends up actually hanging out with a guy who was a server at his sister's wedding and was sort of told off by Logan at the beginning of the actual reception, and is just like casually smoking pot in the back parking lot. So he and Kendall decide to go off and like do some drugs together. Kendall's really pushing him to score all of this stuff, and inevitably there ends up being sort of like a Chappaquiddick moment, a la Ted Kennedy, where they fly off of a bridge into some water by trying to dodge a deer. Neither one of them should have been, you know, behind the wheel or even in a car at this point, because they're on different levels of all sorts of substances. But Kendall's able to pull himself out of this water. He does, you know, to his credit, try to jump back down and get into the car and save this guy. But inevitably, it's too difficult for him to manage. He's in the English countryside, and he makes this critical decision to get up, shake it off, and walk back to the wedding like nothing happened.
Yeah, it's dark. It's very dark. And it's, you know, the climax of the season. And after he's been trying to make this run at his father, you know, his father knows everything. And he's got guys all over the place, and they pulled the kid out of the car. It's like your hotel key card was found in the car. And basically Logan's like, we can wave a magic wand and make all of this go away. And you should probably leave here right now, and you should go sober up. And you need to call Sandy. Sandy being his business
nemesis,
rival.
Nemesis, yeah.
You need to call Sandy and tell him the deal is off. It's no good. And you're done. And you just see Kendall on the spot with such spectacular acting from both Brian Cox and Jeremy Strong. He just crumbles and becomes a little boy and collapses in his father's arm into a bear hug, which is, you know, the term used to describe the company takeover that's going on between Kendall and Logan. So it has added significance as Logan opens his arms up and tells Kendall, you're my number one boy. You're my number one guy. And it's hard to know, like, is this a sincere moment between father and son, or is this just another moment where Logan Roy has his big fat foot on Kendall's throat? And you probably get the sense it's the second thing.
I don't know. It might be a little bit of both. It seems like a genuine moment for at least like the 10 seconds that it happens.
Right, right.
You know, that might be like it takes the breakdown of something that's on the edge of absolute, you know, disaster for Logan to come out and be like, hey, it's okay.
Yeah.
Even though it's not okay.
It's not. It's very not okay. Yes.
Yeah. This kid died and shouldn't have. And that's terrible. So.
And it looks like at least for the time being, Kendall's going to be able to get out of it scot-free. But that's a big question going into season two is how is the death of this poor man going to factor into things? Will a scandal emerge? How will it impact Kendall, who is clearly defanged and depowered? I think it's going to be really interesting to see what kind of Kendall Roy we get in season two. I can't imagine he's going to be nearly as eager to get back into the game as he was throughout the first season. So that's going to be really amazing to watch. And it opens the doors for the other siblings in some pretty great ways. Kieran Culkin, aforementioned as Roman Roy, sort of the jester prince of the Roy Empire. Talk to me about Roman Roy and who he is and why he is just the worst.
Ugh, the ego on him. I mean, I think what we're really doing is talking about ego in each character, but he is just sort of a caricature. Jester is a very good term to use in this. He seems to be in a relationship, but maybe not. I think he has a kid, right? Does he have children?
You said that. That was in the Thanksgiving episode, and I didn't pick up on that. So somebody
I believe he has a daughter.
Correct us. Yeah.
But it's really hard to kind of understand where his lines blur. He seems like a real juvenile party boy in a lot of ways. He's always calling everybody out on their stuff, which I think is sort of helpful in some ways, but also he is just so crazy in his own right. He doesn't seem to be very respected or trusted, especially in the business side of things. It's often, you know, mentioned to him that you only have a job because you work for dad. But he is given little tasks here and there to kind of keep him busy.
he's given a very big task towards the end of the first season that goes very, very wrong.
Poorly. Very poorly. Do you want to tell us what happens on that one?
Well, he's placed in charge of like this satellite launch in Japan.
Yeah.
And
I shouldn't laugh. Like, that's the thing. It's a comedy, but it's a drama.
It's a dark comedy. And yeah. I think like it's so awful that you can't help but laugh.
True.
But he's placed in charge of this satellite launch. There's a lot of like flags of like, it's not going to be ready anytime soon. And Roman, who's an idiot who doesn't understand stuff, he says at one point in the season, he's like, I'm an idiot, but I'm smart. And that's like a decent way of describing Roman. Like, he's smart enough to understand that people know he's an idiot. But he's not smart enough to handle a freaking satellite launch. It's not something that he should be in charge of. And he decides that it would be best if they escalated the launch schedule so that the satellite launches in time for his sister's grand wedding. and because of that, he watches from the bathroom a feed on his phone of the satellite launch. And what he watches instead of a launch is the satellite just viciously exploding.
Yeah.
Like to a point where it looks like if there's anyone in the immediate vicinity there, they are dead.
Yeah.
They're
toast.
Deceased. They're toast. Literally toast. And then they come to find out that it's only, he tries to like forget about it. He tries to pretend like it never happened, which is a great, great coping mechanism.
You literally said this is one of your favorite scenes of television ever.
Yeah.
When he watches the launch streaming on his like little phone. And then he backs up, washes his hands as if to be like, I didn't do that.
it's so genius. It's so cleverly done.
It really is.
But he thinks that like he may be facing something as serious as corporate manslaughter. We come to find out that the most that happened in terms of human casualties was some people, there were two missing thumbs and I think like a missing arm.
Yeah, someone lost an arm. Yeah.
And Roman is thrilled at the news. He's like, oh, that's survivable. That we can push away. But what are the ramifications of that going to be in season two? I,
well,
you got to imagine we didn't see the last
media,
of it. Yeah.
If you control the media and the voice, which is what they've proven to be able to do time and time again, you can downplay it. You can pay people off. You can, you know, do a whole host of pretty despicable things in order to bury a story.
You hope that, you know, some things are so big that you can't spin it out of existence, though modern times are testing that notion.
Right.
So we'll see. We'll see. You know, they own a certain huge ass chunk of the media. But will they be held accountable by other people? I do believe there's some new casting additions to the season. Holly Hunter and
Meryl Streep.
Cherry Jones. I wish Meryl Streep. No Meryl Streep. Holly Hunter and Cherry Jones are joining the cast of Succession. And cool. I believe that they are representing like the liberal equivalent of Waystar Royco. So a huge media empire that is from a liberal standpoint. And you got to wonder like what they're going to challenge the Roys on moving forward. I'm excited to see that storyline play out. Another sibling, Siobhan Shiv Roy, played by Sarah Snook, Australian actress, though you would not know it based on her performance here as the American Shiv Roy. She is a political mover and shaker. She's a consultant on a bunch of campaigns, currently consulting for Gil Evis, played by Eric Bogosian, who is running for president, sort of like a Bernie Sanders type. He's a widow, a recent widower. His wife died by suicide at some point before the series, and Logan Roy is one of the news arms of Waystar Royco. Really poke at that in a way that's like really despicable, just like full stop, but very especially despicable for Gil. But Shiv is able to make to like bridge the gap between Logan and Gil. Like a very unlikely loose alliance is formed between the two of them by the end of the season. I love Shiv. Talk to me about Shiv.
Well, I think it's really interesting. She seems to be the most sort of morally focused.
I mean, she's still a coward, but
yeah. Yeah. I think that she also understands and has a pretty significant ego herself, but she's more left-leaning. She cares about policy. But she also knows that she shouldn't bite the hand that feeds her. So it's an interesting juggle of trying to be an effective political advisor, but also appeasing her father and understanding her family's lineage and the importance behind that. And then the strange sort of convoluted understanding of what it's like to be monogamous and sort of seeing other people at the same time, right? Like there's like this awful seesaw effect of her being like sort of dismissive of Tom, wanting to marry him, thinking that's the right thing to do, but then also going off and having a, you know, sort of an affair with this other political advisor. What's his name? Ian?
Yeah, I don't remember his name. Yeah. I think Nate is his name.
That's right. Sorry.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're kind of seeing how the pendulum can swing in both directions too, right? She's very liberal, left-leaning, and happy to kind of like work with like this progressive candidate, and has also been championing this other woman prior to being hired for this larger campaign, right? And everyone kind of laughing at her and being like, oh, whatever, like Shiv's trying to save the world. And she's like, actually, I am. Like, these are important people whose voices need to be out here. But at the same time, is also compromised considerably herself in her personal life, right?
Yeah, so she's helping out with the campaign for the presidential campaign for Gil Evis. She's not the only person in the Roy family who is flirting with the presidency. the fourth sibling, the oldest sibling, but the half sibling of the aforementioned Roman, Shiv, and Kendall is Connor Roy, who is the oldest son of Logan Roy from Logan's first marriage. He for a living, according to his girlfriend, who is an escort that he hires to be his girlfriend, according to her, for a living, Connor does nothing. Which is a description of his job that he does not take so well.
I would say he suffers from an acute but serious condition of affluenza.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Well, they all do.
But in various stages, but
Alan Ruck playing Connor Roy. I love Alan Ruck, and it's been great to have him in this role. Connor, not Cameron Roy. Connor Roy lives out in the desert. Typically, like, wants to, he says, like, I'm Switzerland when it comes to, you know, the bickering about the line of succession. But he does a lot that sort of questions and challenges the notion of just how much he's trying to extricate himself from the family drama. But the big deal by the end of the season of season one is he announces internally his intentions to run for president. Because he matched wits against Gil Evis and decides that Gil's policies do not stand up underneath intellectual scrutiny. And Connor Roy is the man for the job. And he says to Willa, his girlfriend, who probably hates him more than anybody else hates Connor Roy.
Yeah, seriously.
And by the end of the season starts to get to a place where she's like giving like zero Fs about like expressing it.
Yeah.
But he says, like, I finally found a job that I want to do. President of the United States of America. So I don't know how much that was just like a lark that was being farted out at the end of the first season of Succession versus
it might be
how
a real
much
thing.
Yeah, is this going to be something that actually goes down as a storyline in season two? Hey, look, you know, President Connor Roy, stranger things have happened.
Yeah, so, I'd say so.
So we'll see where that could potentially go.
Yeah.
Just to talk about the Roys proper some more, we can talk about Marcia Roy, by Hayam Abbas, who plays her. I'm sure I am pronouncing her name wrong. First credited actress, on Succession when the opening title sequence shows up every week, which we love. We love the theme song.
Big fans. Know. I like really needed like a quick like refresher at a keyboard to be able to figure out how to play it.
Yeah, Emily's like current ambition in life is to learn how to play the Succession theme song by Nicholas Britell as the composer.
Oh, very nice.
Really, really excellent work there. But Marcia Roy, Logan's third and current wife, who we can't really say much about because she's a mystery. She's a mystery woman.
But there's also a power struggle with her where she's sort of manipulating a lot of messaging from Logan to the children, right? She, at the beginning of the season, he wants to make sure that she's added to the family trust. And everyone suddenly is like, wait a second, why are we signing Marcy on here? Like, what's the deal? And then when Logan obviously becomes very ill, she's kind of overprotective, cold, and controlling of who gets to visit him, what he can do and cannot do. She's kind of pushing him in different directions when he's starting to make his public rounds after he has been more or less okayed, to kind of show back up to different galas and such. So it's pretty interesting to see what her motives might be and to speculate, because yeah, she plays it pretty close to the vest, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And the show has with her too.
Yeah. Like
the show doesn't do much with her yet.
Right. But she seems to be in a lot of sort of supporting roles where she's in the room when conversations are had. She's witness and privy to a lot of the goings on, but we're not entirely sure what that means yet. So yeah, maybe we'll get some clarity on that in season two.
And I forget where things netted out with one of the early season conflicts in season one of just how much power she gains if Logan dies. Like, Logan tried to get everybody to sign on for this notion that she has a share, and when he dies, she gets his share as well, which makes her more powerful than all of the siblings.
Right. Right.
I don't know if that's still in play. I just don't recall if that's still in play. Somebody can chime in and let us know. But there are, you know, concerns among the siblings, mostly Shiv. Shiv and Marcy really don't get along. And there's some concerns that, that Marcy's really just here waiting for the old man to croak, waiting to swoop in and seize some power. And I think that she is a dark horse candidate, as the potential successor, to the empire. I think, I expect that the show will have to at some point move into a territory where Logan is not in the picture anymore, whether that's because he's passed away or he's just too incapacitated to do anything, and eventually that just manifests. And in that scenario, what role does Marcy have? I feel like it's going to be very telling how much Marcy we get in season two about their long-term plans with her, because I think if they don't give us a lot of Marcy right away, then I feel like what they're cooking up is they have some sort of huge ass frickin' Marcy bomb to drop on us at some point down the line in succession that will have even greater impact because she's been such a shadow figure for so long.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be interested to see what ends up happening with that, but she's a pretty compelling character, I think. So
yeah. Then the two main characters who we haven't talked a ton about that are part of the core cast, the aforementioned Tom Wamsgams, played by Matthew McFadyen, who is a British actor. You wouldn't know it.
Yeah, he does a really good job of hiding his accent. Very great, proud of him. So does Shiv, actually. But
great work. Yeah, both of them do. Both of them. So he's Shiv's husband. He's a big social climber, class climber. He wants to be on the right side of wherever the political fallout goes. He gets hooked into some bad stuff along the way in season one. He gains some knowledge of some terrible crimes that have been committed in the cruise wing, the cruise arm of the Empire, the cruise ship arm, the bad ones, as Cousin Greg describes these crimes. And I think in talking about Tom, it's a nice lead in to talk about him as a pair with Nicholas Braun as Cousin Greg, who is the breakout character of Succession for sure. I think these two as a pair, best pair.
They're like frickin' frack.
you know what they are, Emily, just to have some continuity from our Big Little Lies podcast. This is the Nathan and Ed stuff done right.
Yes.
The scenes between Tom and Greg are always very aggro, always very aggressive and contentious, but also outrageously funny, sometimes dramatic, sometimes even like the very rare moment of sweetness between these two characters.
Yeah, it can be a little heartwarming where Tom's like, okay, you have no idea what you're doing, and like, let me actually help you out for like a split second before I ridicule you again.
Well, because Tom is such a butthead. He's a massive massive butthead, and he knows it, and the family knows it, and he is often relegated to that role of just being like the butthead in the room. And then here comes Cousin Greg, who is sent to work at the park. It's one of the parks that's owned by Waystar. It goes very poorly. Like, the first time we ever meet Cousin Greg, he's getting high in a parking lot, and he's going to be like a mascot at the theme park, and he's too high, and a bunch of these kids are like piling on him, and he like pukes through the eyes of his mascot helmet. And like, right there, you know what you're getting from Cousin Greg for the rest of it. But he's like an inside outsider. He's part of the family, but he hasn't been around for a long time. He's known amongst everybody as like Greg the Egg, is his name, because he looked like an egg when he was born.
I think that it would be a fun drinking game if you were going to ever do a rewatch of, you drink every time he gives somebody an awkward hug.
Yeah.
Because he does it a lot, and people do not reciprocate, if you notice. Like, he's always like, oh, hi Shiv, how are you? And he like leans in, and she's always like, ugh.
We'd get very drunk very, very quickly. There's a great GQ profile on Nicholas Braun, who plays Cousin Greg. Apparently he's very similar to Cousin Greg in real life.
And he talks about how he was super intimidated by people like Brian Cox on set. And for the first few episodes, was like, I can't believe I screwed up like all of these different scenes. Like, this is so embarrassing for me. And everyone's like, no, this was perfect. Yeah. And I guess like Kieran Culkin, like, kind of gets amped up and ready to go, like, as the shooting starts, and starts to bully him, and it makes him nervous. And that's sort of like the gold, like, that's the alchemy of like creating and synthesizing Cousin Greg.
It's, oh, like, my God, that's
the
awesome
influence from other people on set who are like either intimidating, bullying him, or both.
That's great. Yeah, I think Kieran Culkin has said that like he didn't research anybody to play Roman Roy. He just like imagined all of the awful people he's known from growing up in New York City. And growing up as a Culkin, I'm sure, was surrounded by tons of horrible people.
Yeah.
So he plays that part so goddamn well.
And he does a lot of ad-libbing too.
Is that right?
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that he just like riffs on, and it ends up being pretty spectacular for the show.
Yeah. So, I mean, Nicholas Braun as Cousin Greg is sort of the, I think, the breakout character of Succession. There was the great moment in episode two that I think that was the moment where I really fell hard for this show, where everybody's like freaking out because Logan's in the hospital and they're sending Cousin Greg back to the apartment to go and get some things. But since he's so new to the family and he has no money, because he himself is not wealthy at all, he comes to the house, like, he can't get in. The doorman rejects him. He can't pay the cab driver because Shiv took his last $20 bill, because $20 means nothing to Shiv but means the world to Cousin Greg.
Right.
And he goes in and he's like in the apartment. He's looking for all these things that everybody needs from him, and he's constantly getting phone calls from the people at the hospital. The siblings all have conflicting agendas for Cousin Greg, and there's a great line that Cousin Greg has when he answers his phone. He says, "This is Greg on Greg's phone." It was such a wonderful moment.
I know. It's so good. You and I say that to each other every once in a while. Hi, this is Greg on Greg's phone.
Greg on Greg's phone, and his interactions with Tom, lightning in a bottle. I mean, there's so many different great character dynamics all across the show, but the funniest stuff comes from
Greg. I have the virus.
Oh, God, that was the best. Yeah, so Tom, when he finds out about everything that's going on with the cruise line, he fills Greg in, because first he tries to talk to Kendall about it, and Kendall says, my father always told me that the people he loved the best at the company were the people who would eat shit for him and never tell him about it. They would just internalize all of the worst problems and never regurgitate them. And Tom gets the message crystal clear: don't tell Kendall this thing that he knows, because if he does, it's just going to drive Kendall crazy. So Tom confides in Greg, because who the hell is Greg? You know, who cares? And he tells Greg this information. It's like a virus. Once you have it, it spreads like a virus. And Greg has that great line when he looks back up at Tom. He goes, I have it. I'm infected. I have the virus. And there's just so many wonderful moments like that between those two characters.
One thing I really love, though, is sort of the evolution of Cousin Greg, is that he starts to leverage sort of some of the things that he's gleaned from his new desk job, right? As soon as he starts getting his scaled paychecks, where he's like really actually bringing in a decent amount of money, he starts positioning himself in ways that he's sort of learned and seen from everybody else in the family interacting, right? He starts to realize that this is a game, and the only way to advance is to really, you know, leverage the situation, have some dirt on a few things, and then be able to present that in a way where it's like, I mean, I can keep doing really great work for you and I love working for you, but, you know, I know all of this stuff. So, like, if there's any way I could move up in the ranks, and everyone's like, yeah, sure, whatever, Greg. Like,
but Kendall takes notice of it in the season one finale, where Greg has a moment with Kendall where he's like, I have copies of some of these really awful documents that I was told to shred that could come in handy if I was on the right side of things.
Yeah.
If you wanted to include me. And Kendall cracks up because he's like, I see you, Greg. I see you. I see what you're doing. I like it. You're scheming. I like it. You're getting in on the game. And Greg's very proud of that moment as well.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see what they do with Cousin Greg. I hope that he doesn't lose all of his innocence, because that's the one. That's the guy, right? I mean, like, either you're awful people or you're an idiot. And the idiot is Cousin Greg. The awful people is everybody else.
I also hope that they don't make him too much of one thing, you know, where he's one note and he's just having all of these awkward interactions unnaturally. Because, you know, when something ends up being a hit like that, you kind of tend to worry, is this person going to be the same thing season two, season three, etc.? And
the reviews of the people who've seen the reviews that you're seeing from people who are reviewing Succession season two are coming from people who've seen five episodes so far.
That's good to know.
Two.
Okay.
And you know, to a person of the TV critics that I read and tend to trust, they are saying that Succession keeps going, you know, that the show that you loved in season one is still firing on all cylinders. So I'm not that concerned about it getting one note. I think I'm expecting consistency, from what we got in the first season carrying over into the second season, which is premiering August 11th. I don't know, Emily, anything else you want to talk about have we set the table? We haven't talked about Jerry. I know you love Jerry.
I love Jerry. She's amazing.
Jay
and
Smith
Frank's
Cameron.
Not bad.
Yeah, Jay Smith Cameron as Jerry of Waystar, Royko's general counsel. She's a recent widow.
She was talking to Bogosian at one point.
Right, she's talking to Gil.
Sorry, I forgot his real name.
Yeah.
Or his name on the show, rather.
hopeful President Gil Evis, because he had lost his wife. You could see them in the background. They're talking.
Yeah, I loved that.
That was a nice moment. Are you shipping Gil and Jerry?
What? Yeah, I'd like
that. Yeah,
that
would be good, right?
That would be so sweet.
Yeah,
she had probably lose her job though.
She had a great moment with Shiv on Shiv's wedding night when Shiv is trying to like broker some things and she's playing some cards and Jerry is like, "Wow, you're so stone cold to be doing this on your wedding night." And then as they're about to part ways, Shiv is like, "You were married for a long time, Jerry. Do you have any fairy godmother advice for me?" And Jerry goes, "I don't know. My husband died. Don't let him die." It's just the line delivery on that is so classic.
Don't let him die.
Yeah. And you mentioned Frank Vernon, who we in the Wiggler Fox household refer to as Frank T. Nelson, because he looks vaguely like Craig T. Nelson.
Yeah, he does.
He's a good guy. Formerly Logan's top guy. Kind of not anymore. We'll see where
he falls.
Well,
he gets fired and then rehired a couple of times. And like the pay's got to be good because who wants to come back to that mess?
Yeah. Stewie, who's Kendall's best friend, who's just like a total loser. He's a coward. He's always trying to make Kendall do the dirty work. I'm sure he'll be back.
Slippery.
For season two. Rob Yang as Lawrence Yee, who is the guy who started Vaulter, a website that's acquired by Waystar in the start of the series. Seemed like he was being hyped up to be a fairly big deal in season one, and nothing really happened with him, so maybe something will happen with him in season two. But I think just as far as like a preview, as far as setting the stage, building blocks, all that jazz, I feel like we've done our job here. Season two premieres August 11th, we will be recording our podcast on the morning of August 12th. Tweet us your feedback. We want that by Monday morning. Get it to us. At Post Show Recaps is our Twitter account. At Round Howard is myself. At Emilet is Emily's self.
That's myself.
That's yourself. Emily, what else? What else you got going on? Just living your life?
Yeah, living my life. Making it happen, man.
Just being out there and kicking butt and doing the things?
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Succession podcast officially underway here on Post Show Recaps. We are excited to be doing it. We really are. Yeah. I mean, after Big Little Lies was a lot of fun to podcast about, but I think in my mind, and I don't think I'm speaking out of school for you, Emily, no question which show is the better show.
At this point in time, for sure.
So I think we should have 10 episodes of Succession season two that will take us through the next little while. Until our first recap of episode one, that'll do it for us here on Post Show Recaps. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Bye. Before we close out today's Succession podcast, one last thanks to our friends over at TrueCar. Every car comes with its share of stories. That ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up a first date, the luxury package you got after a big promotion, or the mileage you saved by riding your bike all summer. While you can't put a price tag on your stories, now with TrueCar, you can at least find out what your car is worth when it's time to sell or trade it in. Just go to TrueCar, simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Then answer a few questions. Navigation and moonroof? Watch as they bump up your value. High mileage? You already knew it was going to cost you, but now you know how much it dings your wallet so you can plan ahead. Once you're finished, you'll get a true cash offer sent in minutes, which you can take to a local certified dealer to cash out or trade in. So, when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. True cash offer not available in all areas.